I had to destroy 3 kilometers worth of property.
American foreign diplomacy at its finest.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
Welcome back, boys. How's it going?
It's been a weird week here in stately Florida. You know, we had that huge storm just come through pretty quickly. Lost power for a few hours. That was interesting.
Did you?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I lost a half day of work. Darn. Pity.
Lucky you.
Yeah, your company still made you come in.
Only one in the city that was open for the full day.
You know, people might need to... No.
No one came in until the storm passed. And even then, only like 15 in total. We could have been closed for the day.
Yeah, I had to do a little privilege check there after the storm because like my power had been out. I couldn't do any cooking and we're a cooking household, not a pre-meal household. So like, let's go get food. You know, storms pass. It's calmed down. And I started looking through. I was like, none of these fucking places are open. Why are none of these places? Wait. Nope. That's inappropriate. There was a storm. It is perfectly justified that they are not open today. That is fine.
That is the correct answer.
Sometimes you got to climb out of your own head for a minute there. Question. When you think about things, do you hear words in your head or do you see pictures? Because I was talking to the wife and she doesn't have like mental images. When she reads, it's the words that when she's reading. So for me, I'm a little different. Like when I think of something, I can like basically conjure a 3D image in my head, rotate it, look at it. She can't do that.
Interesting. That's images for me, although sometimes it's a combination and I'll have words, but they're like headings or subtitles almost.
Oh, you went a step further. You've got mental subtitles.
They're necessary sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair.
I hear words. I don't really imagine things unless I force myself.
That's so interesting.
See, that was part of the reason why, like, reading was always so much fun for me growing up is because I'd get these full, like, cinematic images in my head of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So talking to my wife, that's one of the things that makes, especially, like, audiobooks particularly challenging for her is she is following the words in her head. So if you interrupt her, it's not like she can step back into the picture she just had. She has to back up and read the words back to the point where she was to rebuild the image in her head because it's all words.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It makes her incredibly good at math, though. Like, she is very, very math-focused.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's interesting that we have different answers for that, too. Jared, I think you had a Will It Grong this week.
I do, yes.
I would love to hear it.
So, my idea for a Will It Grong, I'm actually going to take a step back, because I don't believe this one is a go. I actually think it's a zoo. And my idea, because I'm so shocked they haven't done something with it yet, is an elephant.
Okay.
And for his human form, the zoo were just pretty much, you know, weird bondage gear other than like Bazuba, who was chaps and okay, you stepped out of hair.
Another type of fetish gear.
I mean, yes, you're not wrong. But
you just didn't want to make it a go, so you didn't have to come up with some pachyderm theme, weirdly circuitous kill route.
I mean, the zoo kill using physical prowess and an elephant garongi with the trunk just wrapping around people and crushing them into himself makes too much sense.
It's the trunk on its head, Jared?
Yes. He's wearing a diaper like all of the zoo.
It's an elephant that never forgets to kill. To kill.
Human form, honestly, kind of similar to Bazu. He's wearing brown leather. It's not full fringe, but the sleeves are weirdly long to go along with, like, elephant ears. And he's got a belt around his neck that kind of is being worn as a tie or leash, because... weirdly bondage, but that's to give the impression of the trunk.
Yeah, I could see that. I was also thinking like a drunkard's tie, you know, like where it's like loose around the neck and popped collar for the tusks.
That's far too... No, they were about that colorful. That does work. Yeah. So, yes.
Bro, that's white and gray. I'm not giving much credit.
Yeah. So that's my idea. That's my Willet Grong.
Yeah.
There is not a known elephant Gurungi.
Wow.
Yeah, the blind spots are these are really weird. We got sea snake, but not elephant.
Which now leads me to believe that there's not going to be hippo either. So rhino is the only large quadruped mammal.
New world mammal, yeah.
We got a nod, so that means yes, no hippo either.
We gotta tease out these pieces of information. Well, I think we have some things to do this week.
So this week we're going to be watching episode 31, Retaliation.
Episode 31 was written by Arukawa Naruhisa and Takenaka Kiyoshi, and directed by Suzumura Nobuhiro. It originally aired September 3rd, 2000. A jump to the sky turns to a writer review.
It's the beginning of the end, Jared.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
Let's take it from the top.
We start off at Pulpul. We see that Godai and Minori are both there, and they're both in aprons. If only Pops could see that Godai is actually working.
Where is Pops?
Not appearing in this episode.
Yeah.
Weird. So Minori is over another pot of brown, and she pours some into a bowl and tries it and decides she really likes it and turns and gives it to Godai, and he's like, ah, this is great. Pops would even say, ah, oh, this is great, and he does a Pop-style joke. So Godai turns around to clean a table, and Minori goes like, hey, is everything okay? And he's like, why do you ask? And the TV, which I guess was on this whole time, but only now are we actually hearing, proceeds to go through a news report where the media is no longer happy with Kuga.
No, after he blew up 107,000 panes of glass.
Impacted the commute of 150,000 people, and I guess destroyed 3 kilometers worth of property. Yeah.
Like, who the hell counted all these numbers? Like, the panes of glass was such a specific number. It wasn't just 44 buildings have been destroyed. That's countable, but 107,000 panes of glass? It's too specific.
Nori turns off the TV and goes like, look, I don't think I could have beaten the turtle any other way.
Valid.
We get the opening credits. We cut back to Pulpul. Godai and Minori are still talking, and our friend's not the right word, but our brief passing acquaintance, the clip show narrator, comes back.
Ah, Clippy, I've missed you so.
Have you? Have you actually missed Clippy?
No.
And we get a recap starting from when Jinoga kiss-poisoned Kuga.
Disgusting shit.
Godai dying.
Our flashback through our death sequence to full power-up mode.
Yep. And then we get to see the death of the original Jinoga, then the birth of slash death again of clone Jinoga.
Ashy slam Jinoga.
How does one be equally charred and slimy? I don't understand. But props to the prop department. We get Gamego Ray, which was surprising. And God, some of the worst CG we've seen in the show to date.
It is so weird to like go back and look through stuff, because the CGI has gotten better the longer the show's progressed, but some of it still doesn't hold up very well. And that's always the stuff they show in the clip show.
We did, however, get to see the fight with Garima Ba again, and oh, so nice to have a good fight.
Yes.
And they bring up the Rising Titan, and that's where like that part of the clip show ends.
Yep.
Sakurako comes in. She wants to say something to Yusuke, stops herself, asks Minori if she needs help.
I now ship Minori and Sakurako. There was something in that look.
There was. They cut away specifically for an awkward smile.
I'll let you guys have this one.
But Sakurako knows right where the aprons are, so she just gets behind the counter and gets to work.
Yep.
The implication she's somebody else Pops has at some point shanghaied into employment with Pulpul.
I mean, we've seen her working there several times.
That's true, yeah. But the fact that she knows where the aprons are means it's a common enough occurrence.
And the whole time that this exchange that has launched new ships is going on, Yusuke's like, what do you want to ask me? What do you want to talk about? Hey, I'm right here.
Yeah, bro, he's just over here going, hello, darkness, my old friend, by himself.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
But we don't get any resolution there. Instead, we cut to the dining hall of police headquarters, and Ichijo's having a coffee and reading the newspaper. And Sakurai comes up with a plate loaded with rolls.
Bro, it's a stressful time. They just had a massive explosion downtown. The media have turned against everybody. I would also probably eat my feelings.
Yeah, no, he brings up, like, the press is turned, and then despite the fact that 04 is the only one who's done anything, and up until this point, the higher-ups have been all for it. Suddenly, we don't know him?
Yep. So when are you going to bring your boyfriend by?
Yeah, he looks around for a moment, gives a sly look to Ichijo, and says, so when are you going to introduce us to him? And yeah, it's sort of in the when do we get to meet the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But the clearance is like, hey, we know you know who 04 actually is. Don't you think you should let us know at this point? And Ichijo kind of laughs and
no,
takes another sip of his coffee.
He didn't even move his newspaper. Like, he was doing his best to not let this guy sit with him at the table.
Reading the paper is very important to Ichijo, and he does not want to be disturbed during it. But from there, we cut to the dungeon cabaret lounge that has become the Garongi Lair.
Yeah, what fucking serves for the lair this week?
And Baruba walks in. We hear the echoing of her shoes on the tile. Goma's behind her. Despite the fact that he is indoors, still
in a dark
has his
room.
He still has the umbrella up. Buddy, there's literally no natural light here.
It's a choice at this point, and he's committed to the bit.
Good for him for having conviction.
Yeah.
Finally. Ever since he started the side job in Nagano, and he's doing steps for self-care.
You know, I think there's more to it than that. Like, so I think this has become a thing for him, right? Like, every episode he gets slapped by at least Baruba. Like, I think this has become a kink for him. He's like, oh, no, don't slap me in the face again.
Has he been slapped in the last couple? Because ever since the Go showed up and Gadol thanked him.
Yeah, that's fair.
Oh, God, is that why he's been itchy? Like, he's going through slap withdrawals?
Nobody's violently assaulted me in the face lately.
I have to claw my own flesh.
My teeth are itchy.
But Baruba asks Bada if he's ready. And Doldo comes out, and I was under the impression that Go set their own terms entirely, but Bada is specifically told how many to kill and the time limit. All he does is put the weirdly circuitous twist on.
Yeah.
Which he tosses a card.
So the way it was said made me feel like it was something they were repeating. Okay, so 7 hours for 99 people? And he's like, yeah, that'll work. Like, I don't know, just the way they framed it made me think it was something that had already been said and they were repeating it for the sake of clarity.
Jed's nodding along. So, okay, that's not quite how I read it, which was strange because I'm like, I'm positive that the other Go have fully set their terms.
Yeah.
So he tosses a card to Doldo, and we get to hear his voice in this episode.
He's got a cool voice.
It's so weirdly deep for, mm-hmm. I know we've talked about this.
Yeah.
But
it's a clip show. We can rehash old material. Godai has no ass. There we go. We're in it.
So Bada's thing is that he's going to kill, not only is it 99 people in 7 hours, but it's 99 motorcyclists that he has to knock off their bikes and then run over with his.
Specifically remove them from their iron horses and then run over.
Yes.
Ah, yes. Iron horses.
Motorcycles are horses. We went over this back when the Go-Ram did its thing.
We did. It's like the square rectangle thing. All squares are rectangles, but not all rectangles are squares.
Correct.
So there are some motorcycles that aren't horses. Or there's some horses that aren't motorcycles.
There are horses that are not motorcycles, but all motorcycles are horses.
I haven't seen any, but I'll keep an eye out.
And as Bada goes to get on his motorcycle, surprise, Nuzaijo Ray's still here.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he's...
He's a motorcycle mechanic.
I mean, he makes their equipment, but I don't... Did he build the motorcycle or is he upgrading it?
In a cave with a box of scraps.
Yes. Who can say? Time will tell. But Bada turns into his monster form, gets on the bike. It turns into the cool Gorongi motorcycle. He drives off.
He did the monster mash.
What?
Nobody's dead.
We don't have a focal Gorongi this week.
But there are
a few I have not commented on yet.
You can just pick somebody to fuck now?
New Zajo Ray is a little old for my tastes. As a craftsman, he's probably good with his hands, and age brings experience. But I think I'll pass this time.
Are we just establishing headcanon that Zaijo is just like the character in the RPG that just maxed crafting?
So does that mean that we don't see Zaijo Ray die?
Actually, yeah. Yeah, if you're bringing him up here. Are we getting weird circuitous spoilers?
I've raided Baruba too.
But that established that we don't see her die? Didn't we?
You're confusing me. He does bring up there's a precedent of us doing this, but I thought you did Baruba because Suzanne Da started a jam business with the dog and you didn't want to talk about it.
I have to cover everyone by the end of the season. I have to make use of these off weeks.
Anyways, so we then get a quick flashback through the fights with all of the Go up to this point, seeing, once again, Rising Pegasus, Rising Dragon, ending in Rising Mighty and the near-nuclear explosion again. And this is as good a time as any to bring up this week's Tropasatsu, Multiform Balance. So, Multiform Balance is when competitive balance is applied to a single character. If a character has access to multiple forms, this helps make all of them important. I think we saw this best in the actual fight with Gamego originally, where Godai cycled through three of his forms during the fight. This does not have to include, and usually doesn't, the mid-season upgrades, unless all the forms get an upgrade, which, hey, they have, so it does still apply. And so we, of course, got for our Kuga form, Mighty form, which is sort of the jack of all stats, with Rising Mighty having the strongest kick power of all of them.
Yeah, it could set off a nuclear detonation, so, you know.
We've got Dragon form, which is a fragile speedster. Agility is the name of the game. Pegasus form is a glass cannon.
But gun.
Yes. I can snipe you from all the way over here, but I can't really hit worth a damn. And then Titan form is the Mighty Glacier. It doesn't move quickly, but you can't stop it. Started with the meh, but with the go, we have seen a good use of each of these forms. It's not just Mighty Kuga does it again, Mighty Kuga does it again. Like so many of the off-screened Grongi that are just, yep, five of these died to Mighty Kick.
So what are some other examples in media of this being a thing? Like, where do we see other examples of this trope?
I've got one for you, specifically. Zoids Zero.
Ah, the Liger.
Liger Zero's different armor forms.
Yep, we got the white Liger was just the normal. The orange one was the blades.
Yep.
There was the blue one, which was the speedster.
Yes.
And then there was the Panzer, which was just, it's a gun now.
I can't move, but I don't have to.
I move mountains with bullets.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
There was a old Hanna-Barbera cartoon called The Centurions that growing up I loved watching. And they were three people and they were each themed. One was land, one was sea, one was sky. But they all had different like hardpoint suits and various armors that could attach. And depending on what needed to happen for the episode that day, they could swap in different armors for it. It's the same sort of a thing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I loved that show. Hard to find to rewatch these days.
Yeah, I would imagine. Most of the old Hanna-Barbera stuff is.
But let's continue on. Cut back to Polpol. Godai, Sakurako, Minori are still there. Godai brings up, like, hey, you know, when I needed to try and jump high, I got blue form, and And Sakura is like, here's a thing Tsubaki said. And we get the flashback to Tsubaki bringing up the stone seems to be reacting to Godai's will.
The spirit stone.
Yes, they do call it spirit stone this time. Spirit stone Amadam, in case you have forgotten the name of it.
Amadam it. Like corporate
silence. And Ichijo calls and says that ULF-41 has been sighted killing people. And it's like, all right, I'm on my way. And to emphasize that point, we then cut to under a bridge, and a guy in a floral shirt is on the ground. And we get some pretty cool and pretty vicious bike foo against this poor defenseless schlub.
Yeah, it's more like bike axe murder at this point.
It's true, but we'd see Bada slap him with the front wheel. And then he trips over his own bike trying to get away, and Bada wheels up and slams down and rolls over and says, that's seven. He turns back into James Dean for a moment, puts on his helmet because safety first, kids.
Yes.
And drives away.
It'd be really sad if his game ended because he just got a concussion.
You're right. That's not how he should go.
Yeah.
We then cut to Godai just motorcycling down the street, and he transforms, and the narrator says that Yusuke Godai is there to face
protect
evil.
People's smiles.
No matter the cost. And that's the end of the episode.
I love that the narrator has such a tonal dissonance from the episodes himself. He takes everything so super seriously and like epic level, and the whole series as a whole is weird to say this about like a karate fighting Bugman show, but it's a lot more down to earth. You know, we see people cooking and like doing normal life shit. Meanwhile, it's like, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy narrator showed up like this time on Dragon Ball Z. It's like, it's a complete tonal shift from the normal show.
It's why he only shows up for clip show episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So no monster died.
Nope.
So there's not a monster to rank.
Nope.
It's a clip show. Do we want to rank the episode?
While good for a clip show, there isn't really a whole lot to really rank. No fight, very little plot, and a lot of reused footage. I don't think it warrants it.
Yeah, no, I don't.
I guess just give some general thoughts then. Like, yeah, it was fine. I get the concern that everyone is having for Godai. I appreciate like him being clearly shaken by what happened.
That was a good moment to see. Not for him, but like for us, the audience, to see that this actually like really affects him. It's not something he just shakes off. If you are in the kind of position to have power, use it, and there to be ramifications for other people, and public opinion turning against you does not make you second guess yourself, you do not need to be in power.
I agree with that. It's super realistic, but also so shitty how quickly they've turned on him as far as public opinion goes. But yeah, I guess when you did 3 kilometers worth of collateral damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you cratered an area the size of some small towns.
But as we've pointed out, like, what other options are there? Only Kuga has been effective against the Gorongi.
Mm-hmm. And you get into some heavy moral quandaries when you get to that point. Like, at what point is the weapon more dangerous than the enemy, you know?
Ding, 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 there's a theme.
Mm-hmm. That does seem to be the point of it. And again, this is a show aimed at preteens. So
I am once again astounded
God, by American TV sucks.
Yeah, I'm once again astounded by, like, Japanese social alacrity. Like, their ability and willingness to discuss complex themes, even to children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready for next week's episodes.
Yeah, this was your trauma buffer. Clench your jaws and walk into the next couple episodes.
I didn't think I'd feel this way about, like, the impending death of a Gorongi.
Of a monster killing people with a motorcycle?
Yeah. But he's one of my favorite characters in the show.
I will say he is pretty badass in the next 2 episodes.
Yeah, he's gone toe-to-toe with Kuga already and is the only Grongi that's clashed with Kuga and not walked away worse for the wear.
Yeah, he's pretty handily won every encounter he's had with Kuga so far.
Yeah. This is also a good time to bring up the fact that we don't know anything about Kuga other than the current Kuga is Yusuke Godai. We have no frame of reference for what the Kuga entity was in the past, what powers it wielded at full strength. We have very little information. We have, mythology poems.
We might have one thing in the fact that Sakurako brings up that there is no reference at all to the Rising abilities. So, say what you will, it does not appear that the previous Kuga had that.
His name is Riku.
Where's Sora? That's my fifth eye roll this episode.
Going for the record, I see.
I am. Listen, we don't have a ranking system, so I'm just going for broke on the eye rolls.
Is there anything else you guys want to talk about for this episode?
Honestly, this is a bit of a bridge for us, and I'm kind of just excited to move to the next episodes.
I talk about not being ready, but I am very excited for the next couple episodes. Honestly, for the series just keeps getting better.
We are coming up on the end of the Evolution Arcade and the beginning of the Ends Arc, with episode 35 into episode 36.
So getting ready to transition to the final arc of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Something to look forward to. The series has been on such an incline lately. Excited to see if this continues.
Yeah. Watching these clip shows has really given some perspective on how far we've come. Good place to pause before we move forward.
So with that, thank you for listening. Join us next week when we will be watching episodes 32 and 33, Obstacle and Cooperation.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. For $5 a month, you can get access to bonus episodes. Releasing shortly after this episode, hopefully, will be our coverage of the very first battle DVD for Kamen Rider. Kamen Rider Kuga vs. the Strong Monster Gojino Da.
What production of hair isn't a sexual encounter?
Maybe being on stage for it, but as an audience member, sure. It's just watching something.
I think even as an audience member, you got a pretty good shot at having a sexual encounter during a production of Hair.
Ugh.
Isn't there an orgy in it?
Yes.
And not even the one in the rafters from the stage crew.